Good morning. Welcome to today's CIO Live on Europe and tech. Markets continue to be volatile, and to know more about where to invest and how to identify opportunities in these uncertain times, today I'm Sandeep Ghantori, joining here from Singapore, and I'm privileged to see my colleague Rolf Ganter actually joining us live from Zurich. Rolf, morning. It must be very early for you.
Morning, Sandeep. Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Thanks once again for us waking up early. So I think quickly before we start today's session, from a logistics point of view, so there is an ask question button. So feel free to click and submit questions. We'll address that later. So now let's take a step back and look at how markets have done year to date. So if you look at this slide, so this is our scenarios on tariffs. And so far, global equities are actually up 2% year to date. US market gave up most of the gains, now down slightly. Tech is down almost 6% year to date. Actually, there are two markets which are still up double digits, China and Europe. So Rolf will later go through his latest views on Europe, and I'll address particularly from China tech point of view. But as you can see, one of the reasons why markets continue to be volatile, as you can see in this particular slide, the latest developments around tariffs, particularly on Canada and Mexico, and also the additional 20% tariff on China, as you can see, it's still part of our base case. But let's say if this kind of tariffs are continued on a sustained basis, clearly we would go into one of our risk scenarios out there. So please follow our views regularly. But at this stage, we still think there is upside to global equities, and we would actually take advantage of volatility. So as promised earlier, let's now go through the two opportunity sets that we have, both in tech and also Europe. So over to you, Rolf. So tell us where and how we can actually invest in Europe, and also how do you navigate the ongoing volatility, particularly in global equities?
Sure. Thank you very much, Sandeep. And I think there's one answer to that: be selective. That's clearly what we believe it's the right way to go in Europe. And talking about ways, we identified here an investment theme, which we call six ways to invest in Europe. Because Europe, I think nobody has looked really at the market over the, let's say, or it was out of favor the last couple of months, to say it at least. And now, you know, as you just mentioned, Sandeep, Europe is back. So why is it back? Because there are a couple of catalysts, and if you look through the news every day, it's about potential ceasefire, it's about high energy prices, about German elections, everything. It seems like in every country or in the whole region, there's a lot of things going on. And the whole team, bottom-up driven, you know, we were sitting there and said, look, what's right now happening in Europe here? And we identified several catalysts. And based on that, we identified then the six ways. I mean, there are always different ways how you can look at things, but we look at it in six ways. And it just erupted in this kind of six ways to invest in Europe. And the big picture is clearly about a cyclical economy, or let's say economic recovery. And we are quite cyclical in Europe overall. And I touch on that. It's about what happened in Germany 1.5 weeks ago in terms of the election. It's about, and today is a good example again, when we hear the latest news flow that no military spending or let's say additional supplies hold back by the US. So clearly more defense and a little bit clearly also cybersecurity spending. The whole thing, then what's going to happen in the Ukraine thereafter, the rebuild. But don't forget the whole Eastern Europe. It's really a big, big area, which needs then also, let's say, or is going to benefit from this kind of rebuild. And then clearly what I mentioned also before, we have higher energy costs here in Europe, much higher than in many other regions of the world. And last but not least, you had just that slide with tariffs. I mean, tariffs, very export-oriented industries in Europe. You know, how can we, let's say, get exposed or not exposed to tariffs, i.e. kind of isolated. So these were the six ways we identified. If you just move on to the next slide, please, I'll give you a little bit more details around that. Because at the end, right, you know, I said in the beginning, selectively. So economy in Europe is not great, right? But, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And you see that on the left chart, we really turned even from some negative growth we had in Germany to slightly positive growth We foresee that for 2025, and you know, a marathon always starts with the first step, and that's here the case. So really, we start from a low base, but at least it's now accelerating. And what are the reasons? Well, one of the reasons are clearly, you know, the central banks here have been quite active in Europe. The ECB next week, we expect another cut. Swiss National Bank, were the first ones really to cut, and you see that on the right scale here, right? So really, they're quite aggressive in terms of bringing rates down, and that clearly helps here the economy, and that helps also, you know, selected industries like in the industrial space, in consumer discretionary and materials from this kind of cyclical recovery. So that's the first of the six ways. Now, if you move on to the next one, you see then Glyn on the next page that, and I mentioned the election outcome, well, actually quite positive 1.5 weeks ago for Germany. So it looks like a coalition of, let's say, the middle and a little bit middle left. And so that has these kind of two parties rather than three before. They will have the majority in the German parliament, and they can really then decide, and they can really act on it. Before, with three, it was always a hassle, and as we know, it did not work. So the government broke up just recently. And so what's now the result? Well, look, you see that on those charts. Germany, on the right chart, Germany has definitely not overspent. They have underspent a whole decade and more in terms of infrastructure, in terms of digital assets, you know, in terms of the digitalization of the whole economy, everything. And so when you see DEs, Germany, Deutschland, means like they really were really tight. And you know, when Germans are famous for something, it's definitely not overspending. And yes, that gives them now finally some leeway. And if you just look the last 2 days in the press, there were rumors that up to 400 billion euros could be, you know, created in a way by assuming actually additional debt for infrastructure, and another, let's say, 400 billion could potentially be spent for defense. And is that possible? Well, if you look at the financials or the government balance sheet, it is. So if you look at the left chart, you see the overall debt level relative to GDP is really way below, for example, the US, which you see at the right end, or versus many other states. So there's freedom to spend more, and that really is also one of the results, right? The hope of that German beneficiaries, you know, that these kind of things will happen, and this has clearly helped for the companies involved there, being in the energy, in the industrial space, in chemicals, even in my area, which I cover normally, automotive. So really, that has lifted all those boats based on that. So this was the second one of these six one. What's about the third one? Well, if we move on to the third way, clearly, I just mentioned the word defense, and yeah, the latest news is clearly not that positive if you think about it, what it means for Ukraine. But I tell you already what we expect, and yesterday you saw that. And when you look at some of the market, really the European-focused defense companies really enjoyed the best ride, I would say, for as let's say, for the long decade or decades. And what we see here is like we're gonna see in June a NATO summit, and there they need to really bring it to the table. How much more do they want to spend? There's a target. NATO really demands 2% spending for mainly for equipment per year of the GDP of a government. Some of them are below 2%, and some of them are slightly above. But I tell you, if they go from 2 percentage points to 3 percentage points, which is probably the minimum you can expect, that adds another 230 billion in annual spending, what is required. And most of it goes to defense equipment. And so this is one a big boost. And after today's news, I'm sure, you know, companies exposed in the defense sector will have another good ride here, because it's just pure business for them. And you see it also in the right chart. I mean, so far, a lot of the spending is happening in the US, but Europe here needs to catch up big time. And that is really helps this sector, which is part of industrials here. And as I said, next catalyst, NATO summit. And so please stay tuned here, more to come. Now, what's the next one? If you talk about the next way, as I said, there are plenty of ways. And here it will be then after a ceasefire. And we still believe the base case is clearly that something will happen this year. We're going to see some ceasefire. There will be also some kind of rebuild needed, as you can imagine, after the war. But also, as I said in the beginning, there will be a recovery across Eastern Europe. So banks, will benefit from that in the Eastern European region. We're going to see also, once again, industrials, we're going to see construction, rebuild of infrastructure, housing, transportation. This is clearly something which is an add-on here and adds to additional up to, let's say, 500 billion over the next 10 years, an estimate by the World Bank here. So it also constant flow, which clearly helps some of these industries being involved. And if we just move on here, it's clear. What else is there? Well, I mentioned before energy costs. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but in Europe, one of the biggest challenges for the industry right now is next to discussion about tariffs. But here has been for years, actually, that our energy costs are elevated. They have been so much higher than in, for example, the US. We talk about 3 to 4 times higher in terms of the gas prices right now. And you see here, they spiked during, you know, the Ukraine war. So really that, if you're a business and you need energy, you need gas, you're clearly uncompetitive. So what we expect that some of the gas might flow back from Russia, but also overall, if there's a peace deal, if there's a ceasefire, that really energy prices will come down. And that helps, you know, also here certain companies in which area? Well, for example, again, in the chemical space, in the industrial space, in my space, automotive energy intense industries to really become more competitive, but also indirectly, if like say consumers spend less for energy, they have more money to spend, for example, more for retailing again, actually, yeah, spend it where they had to cut back in the beginning. So 5 of the 6 we've through. So what's now the last one? Well, Sandeep, you showed in the beginning the tariff slide. Once again, I mentioned it. If you move on to the next one, what's about those companies not being exposed to tariffs? Well, you know, what would we look at? We would look at companies which have either strong domestic production already in the US, when we talk mainly about US tariffs, or they enjoy a pricing power, they enjoy such a strong competitive positioning that they really, really will be not affected by the tariffs at all. And so overall, at the end, we identified more than 20 names across the different categories which qualify under one of these 6, or some of them even 3 or 4 of these 6 ways. And this is really the theme we create here of Europe. As I said in the beginning, if you look at Europe, be selective. So the stock selection, the overall theme is less than 10% of the MSCI Europe. Valuation, a little bit higher than Europe, but Europe is much lower than US, so around valuation around 15 to 16 times PE. And earnings growth is certainly much better, superior to what we see in the rest of Europe. With that, I give it back to you, Sandeep.
Yeah, thanks, Raul, for the detailed explanation. So I'll come back to you later during the Q&A session. I do see some questions coming. But before that, let's also address the big elephant in the room, which is the correction in tech. So as I mentioned, year-to-date, tech is down 6%. And if I really, you know, again, take a step back and look at what really triggered this correction was, you know, the introduction of DeepSeek's models back in January, and then a lot of noise around data center, you know, cancellation of data center commitments, and also recently some supply chain developments. I also see today China tech is also down given the tariff uncertainty. So I would say in the last 1 week, I think tariffs is another reason why tech stocks are coming under pressure. So let's actually go through some of the debates out there in tech. So starting with the slide on the CapEx spending, since there is a lot of noise, I think our view is that we are not seeing any change or cut to CapEx. In fact, we raised our CapEx estimates already twice this year, and we are quite comfortable with this big force CapEx of $302 billion this year, which is almost 35%. And that's been reiterated many times in the last 1 month during the report season as well, including the CEO of NVIDIA last week, where spending remains quite solid. So what does it mean for the overall tech? As you can see on the next slide, we clearly see very strong growth continuing for tech even into this year. On top of the 22% profit growth for global tech, we are seeing 18% profit growth. And that should be supportive for the mid-teen returns that we still see for 2025. For big tech, we also see strong growth of more than 20%, as you can see, 21% for the big tech. And as far as our style, we continue to like companies with strong free cash flow generations. As you can see in our AI portfolio, we do have companies actually that can generate strong free cash flows. So the question is then, with this kind of setup, why markets are still down, right? I mean, it seems like another 18% profit growth, why markets are worried? So as I mentioned, there are a lot of debates out there. and let's go through some of the debates. So let's move to the next slide, which shows you the product roadmap, because recently there's been a lot of noise about supply issues, for example, for the Blackwell chips and what we can expect in the next 6 to 12 months. So there is an event coming up on March 17th, the GTC event, where we think that there should be more updates coming on the upcoming product roadmap for AI chips. And that shows that there is enough innovation. And those investors who are really worried about threat from, you know, companies like DeepSeek in China, we think that this innovation should be able to justify the strong capex spending, because when we look at from a tokens per second, the real metric that really differentiates some of these AI chips, we think that there is innovation in place. The next debate, obviously, on the next slide is to look at what's happening in the US AI or global AI versus China AI debate. Even during this weekend, actually, there was an update from DeepSeek in terms of their ability to make, for example, the margin profile that they mentioned theoretically, not in reality, but at least, you know, in theory, what is the potential margin potential that they can generate. And that kind of led to some noise yesterday. So what we have done is we looked at the total size of the AI opportunity, both globally and also in China. What we found is that the global AI opportunity is quite big, almost reaching 1 trillion next year, both from a capex spending and also from revenues. The margin profile is much better in global AI, right? So we're talking about companies in software making 35 or 40% operating margins. Some semiconductor companies actually generating 50% operating margins. And that is the reason we think the 35% operating margin for the global AI opportunity set is quite solid. But China, it's still early days, right? I mean, we are talking about potentially that market reaching $80 billion revenue. So in a way, 8% of global AI and the margin profile is lower. And you may say that, well, we are very conservative on this 8% penetration. But just bear in mind, when I compare the enterprise IT spending today globally versus China, China is somewhere 5 or 10%. So in a way, we are somewhere in line with those enterprise IT spending. Now, let's move to the next slide in terms of where are we in the upside cycle. So given the year-to-date correction, what we have seen is the table, the two tables that you see, the sensitivity analysis for global AI and China AI. We think that now the risk reward for global AI companies has again improved, particularly when you see right at the center, a mid-teen upside is what we think is reasonable. For China AI, while we still think we are in the early days, but given the strong rally and the year-to-date outperformance, we think there is a low-teen upside. So mid-teen upside for global AI and low-teen for China AI. So right now, after the recent underperformance, the global AI names once again start to look quite attractive. So doesn't mean that there is no upside for China AI, but just to put things into context, I think China AI, again, the upside has been priced in somewhat. But having said that, this landscape, particularly in China AI, things are moving very fast. So it also, these tables also show you potentially if there is any upside to end demand, also shows you the potential scenarios where in case you're bullish, of course, there is more upside. But we think what we see in our more base case of, you know, low teens is quite reasonable. Now, the next debate, obviously, is tariffs. So we'll go through what's happening there as far as tariffs is concerned. So one of the reasons why we started to see big correction yesterday in US tech overnight is also because of this potentially 25% tariffs on Mexico. So we have been highlighting how the AI supply chain so far may not be subject to tariff risk as compared to, let's say, smartphones and others, is that the actual value add of AI servers or AI supply chain from China is quite limited. For example, when you compare with smartphones and other consumer PCs and other devices. But we also need to understand that when it comes to AI servers, there are a few companies which actually moved their operations from China to Mexico, and it remains to be seen, potentially with the new 25% tariffs starting tomorrow, whether these AI servers, you know, which are costing as high as 500,000 or 1 million, whether we need to actually apply the 25% tariff. So that is potential another reason why we saw the AI supply chain and also some of the semiconductor companies coming down. Now, again, to put things into context, on the next slide, the correction that we saw back in 20 2018 during the tariff uncertainty, global tech was down close to 20% from peak to trough. The semiconductor supply chain stocks were down, 20 or 25%. Now, year to date, from the recent peak, semiconductor stocks are already down, almost 15% or 20% from the peak. So, in a way, you can say that the markets are already pricing in a lot of negatives compared to the recent corrections, whether it is a geopolitical escalation in 2022 or 2023 or the tariff-related uncertainty in 2018. I would say with the upcoming, product launch events in mid-March and also some results due end of March and also the supply chain updates in beginning of April, probably the focus will eventually shift back to fundamentals because we do have a bit of vacuum right now where the focus is more on macro and tariffs. And once we have this catalyst re-emerging potentially in 2 weeks' time and after that, I guess investors will again look back to the strong fundamentals that we have. So in a way, what I can say right now is both in 2022 and 2023 and 2018, when we have reached these kind of valuations, the market started to find a bottom. And once we see catalyst emerging, we started to see the share price rebounding. And we think that potentially something similar would play out once the macro uncertainty is gone. So that is the reason I think on the next slide, if you look at our summary on tech and AI, I think right now there is a lot of uncertainty and risks and noise about what's happening in the supply chain, what's happening from a data center expansion point of view. But the good news is the results show that the underlying demand is still there. Some of the risks around margins and also on some of the recent CapEx investments from a supply chain, we think that the market overreacted. And valuations right now, particularly in the semi supply chain, has reached a level where I think we are starting to see some stocks actually trading close to historical bottom. In terms of catalyst, as I mentioned, the next 2 weeks is still busy from a macro point of view, and starting from mid-March is when you do have a lot of company-specific updates, product launch events, the GTC event, for example, and then some results due end of March and April. So we think that eventually focus will shift back to fundamentals. But our key conclusion is also that, as we have been highlighting, these last 3, 4 months, the 2025 volatility, tech volatility should be back, and we would definitely take advantage of, some of the structure strategies, including selling puts, and also we would take advantage of buy the dip in quality AI stocks. So with that, I'll take the questions. So we do have quite a few questions coming. Let me go through some of them. I think for Rolf, there is one question on the defense spending. You mentioned potentially 3%. Is that a potential upside cap, or do you see more upside to the 3%? So, I mean, I think investors want to know what is the potential upside risk to even out the 3% number that you mentioned as far as defense spending is concerned.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Sandeep, and thanks for that question. I think, as I mentioned before, every percentage point, let's say if you go to 2 to 3, you see 230 billion annuals more spending, and most of it goes to defense equipment. And with the latest news, I think the 3% will not stay the limit. So clearly, if you, and I had this chart before, in let's say between 3 and 4% is certainly something which we would consider as realistic. So you could add now suddenly around 300 billion, so more than double what we have right now. And so this is really where Europe needs to do a big catch up, because they have been, as shown before, in Germany, underspending not only across infrastructure digitalization, but definitely also defense. So for us, it's one of the key areas which Europe will spend a lot, and it gives a lot of business opportunities. So it's not the sky which is the limit, but 3 to 3.5% is certainly something which is absolutely realistic.
Okay, that's a fair point. The next question is on tech investments, I guess related to the big CapEx announcement that came in the semiconductor supply chain overnight. So the question is, what are the thoughts on those investments, and will that help the tariff situation? I think this year, and I think when Rolf was also going through the 6 ways to invest, and the last angle was particularly focusing on companies in Europe which have manufacturing in the US, I think in the tech side, So far, most of the manufacturing is in Asia, and we are starting to see that actually where companies are actually expanding, as we have seen with a few companies overnight announcing big CapEx investments. So hopefully that would lead to, tariff risk somewhat diminishing. But the bottom line is that we need to understand that expansion in the U.S. comes at a cost. So our study shows that the margins of some of these supply chain companies, for example, those based in Asia versus the U.S., the margins for companies with their operations in the U.S. are at least 300 to 500 basis points lower in the U.S. So while expansion could mean potentially less tariff risk, but from an operational, from a fundamental point of view, we should also expect that margins in the future should be somewhat lower. So net to net, I think when it comes to the P multiple and the potential EPS growth, while maybe the headline risk is diminishing for some companies that are expanding, but at the same time, we do think that the growth that you see with these operations based in Asia will not be the same if they continue to expand in the U.S. So that's a risk we need to monitor. The other question again is to Rolf, and the question is, how is Europe affected by the relationship between China and the U.S., and where do you think this going in the future?
Well, I would say summary between a rock and a hard place, because at the end, I want to do business with both. I think a lot of it depends how the situation between the US and China will play out. I mean, if I just look the last time, there were some also under Trump 1.0, there was clearly also the concern, but at the end, diplomacy helped, and so it worked out fine. This time, we will see, because I think clearly we see a much more aggressive stance here from the US. And if they say, potentially, if you're not with us, you're against us, I think Europe might have to decide. But I tell you, just like a little bit of mood here, when I look over the last few days after this conference we saw in Washington, it's clear, right? Europe looks for new allies, they look for new friends, they look for new business partners as well, because they feel a bit not necessarily in a way treated too well. And so I think that is also a chance for Asia and Europe to come closer together in trade. And yeah, I think there, I'm not that pessimistic, because then you look out for who else is wanting to do business with you. So.
I think, yeah, that I kind of agree with that. You definitely see some positives eventually. The other question is, what is the best way to position in China Tech? I think when the issue with a lot of investors is that when they invest either in the US tech or China tech, most of the times they invest across a very large set of diversified set of companies, which I kind of agree from a diversification point of view. But specific to AI, we also need to understand that not every company is going to benefit, particularly if companies are not investing aggressively, if they don't have the advantage in terms of LLMs and also the compute that the big companies are able to possess, for example, in China. So that is the reason in China tech, you also need to follow the same playbook, identify those leaders which have a strong first mover advantage in terms of LLM leadership, large language model leadership, and also the ability to invest from a compute point of view because of the export controls in China. I think not every company would be having that level playing at field advantage that you have globally. So those companies which have a strong track record of, for example, cloud platforms are in a much better position to take advantage of these export controls because they know how to run a huge cloud platform, for example. So I think on China AI, we also follow the same playbook where we think that companies with strong first mover advantage and also deep pockets to invest in AI CapEx are the ones that would definitely benefit. The next question, I think, is to Rolf, maybe very quickly as we're running out of time. So, Rolf, from a sector's point of view and also from a country's point of view, what do you like in Europe?
So, I highlighted before industrials a few times. So, we just upgraded industrials. It goes across the board, manufacturing cycle coming back, defense, a lot of interesting opportunities. Specific countries, and when you look through our equity compass, right, we clearly have a preference for Germany, and we do that with kind of structured strategies, playing the upside while still protecting to the downside.
Great. So, if I have to summarize today's session, I think the key takeaway is that I think the performance so far in 2025 has shown that volatility is going to stay here. But equally, there are also opportunities. For example, the way Europe has outperformed, China has outperformed. So it also shows that you cannot have concentrated positions, and that's the reason you need to have a very diversified portfolio. And that is a reason you should obviously in a market like this where it's going to volatility is going to stay here, also take advantage again as we have been highlighting through structured strategies. So that is a reason I think we definitely need to monitor what's happening both from a geopolitical point of view and also from a corporate fundamental point of view, bottom-up point of view, given the unique set of opportunities. With that, once again, thanks, Rolf, for joining us. Again, it's very early still, so go back to bed. You still have a couple of hours left. And with that, thanks once again for joining us. And if you have any questions, please reach out to your advisors and see you next time.